It's probably safe to say that no working journalist knows Donald Trump better than David K. Johnston, who first met the 45th president in 1988 and has tracked him ever since. David is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter and best-selling author of the book The Making of Donald Trump. He has lectured on economics, journalism, and tax policy on every continent except Antarctica, and is a former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. He is also a teacher at Syracuse University's College of Law. His new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David K. Johnston back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Great pleasure.
Joe, thanks for having me.
The last time we had you on was just a few months ago when the last book was coming out in paperback, and we teased the fact that this book was coming out and that you would join us to talk about it. The title of it is It's Even Worse Than You Think. How do you believe that it's even worse than we perhaps thought it would be a year ago?
Well, my peers in national journalism have not done a particularly good job of telling you what Trump and the Trump team are doing to our government. There's a lot of very good coverage of all the chaos and palace intrigue in the White House. But the story that matters to you, to your income, your job, your safety on the job, your health, your children's welfare and education, that's a story of government. And that's not being covered. I mean, journalists have never done a particularly good job of covering the federal agencies, but today, with so many journalism jobs lost, roughly 40% of them since the turn of the century, we're in a situation where there are huge federal agencies without a single mainstream reporter covering them. So what I did was set out to show you what is happening in these agencies. And a lot of it is directly contrary to what Donald Trump promised in the campaign.
But doesn't that get back to the point of the chaos, in the sense that it's directly contradictory, but this also, from my conversations with you previously, this doesn't surprise you at all, because this is kind of how the guy operates, right?
No, that's right. I mean, Donald has behaved just as I said he would before he took office, that because he quite literally doesn't know anything, and for people who have a hard time believing that, if you read my previous book, just read his testimony under oath that shows he doesn't know anything. But what isn't being covered, when people therefore don't know about, and that's why I say it's even worse than you think, is how this is translating. Remember, Steve Bannon, who was his strategic advisor, said, I'm a Leninist, and we're going to take apart and destroy the administrative state, by which he means the capacity of the government to run a tax system, which pays for government, and a regulatory system. And that's exactly what they're doing in the agencies out there in a whole variety of ways. And they've been doing it in an underhanded way. Instead of appointing people through the normal process, the people around Trump have been appointed through the temporary appointment process. They're supposed to serve no more than 130 days. Well, we're more than 365 days into this administration, and many of those people are still there, and Congress has done nothing about it. And many of these people, there was no Senate inquiry, there was no examination of their fitness. So you get people, for example, in the Education Department, led by a woman with no experience in education, who had never attended a public school, but who's very much in favor of corporate and religious private education, charter school education at least, and whose principal program she promoted, the Detroit charter schools, are so bad that the charter school movement tries to make sure people don't pay attention to them because it's the worst example possible for charter schools. Who does she bring in to deal with the student loan problems? She brings in people from the student loan industry, of course.
Now, how much of this is orchestrated by the President of the United States? And if not he, who is orchestrating this? Because, as you say, this is affecting pretty much every department and every aspect of our federal government.
Well, it's not Trump personally. It's the people he's brought in. He has created what the ancient Greeks called a kakistocracy, a government by the worst and most venal among us. So remember, he ran on a platform that was in my trilogy of books, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print, that Washington's been passing laws that if you're in the vast majority of Americans, pick your pocket and literally redistribute money to people at the top. He ran against Goldman Sachs specifically, and then he brings six high-level former Goldman Sachs people into his administration. The tax bill, both in the original 100-word, what I call shopping list, was a tax bill for Goldman Sachs clients. First they put out a shopping list, then an extended shopping list, then they passed a bill. More than 80% of the individual tax benefits go to people in the 1%, and most of those to people in the top 1 in 1,000 households. That's people who make more than $2 million a year. But Trump isn't doing this. It's the people who came with him. Donald works apparently about 5 hours a day, minus lunch. He said he'd never leave the White House. There was so much work to do. Never leave the White House. Never. I won't see my golf courses for 4 years. He spent 1 out of 3 days at Mar-a-Lago, his Bedminster, New Jersey golf course, Trump Tower. When he leaves, unless it's to give a talk, he only goes to Trump properties. And, of course, that means you and I as taxpayers at the federal, state, and local level, if you live in the places where those are located, we're spending enormous amounts of money at those properties.
When it comes to the Trump administration and what they're doing to America, I just want to hone in on this for a second. So the people around him, is there an ideology? Is there an agenda? Or is that singular by the people that he has brought in around him?
The people he's brought in around him, Joe, have a very simple philosophy, and that's quite clear, and that is they hate government. And they want the rich to be able to do whatever they want to do. So they're allowing polluters to pollute. They have reduced the number of pollution inspectors below the level mandated by Congress, and they're not hiring. They have reduced job safety inspections. They haven't posted on the internet the death of a worker on the job since last August, and about 4,800 Americans a year are killed at work because of, you know, all sorts of different accidents and things. And they haven't posted a name or an event since last August. So they have a real clear ideology. They want a government, you know, of, by, and for the rich and with no protections for the vast majority of Americans.
David K. Johnston is our guest. The name of the new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. You write about many subjects in the book, one of them being the wall and the fact that the president said that Mexico would pay for the wall. We obviously know through the budget negotiations that that is not, at least directly or as advertised, going to happen. So, how did we get to this situation, and what does it ultimately mean?
Well, Trump, who was given, and I emphasize that verb, given a degree in economics by Penn, he doesn't know anything about economics. He consistently said Mexico will pay for the wall. During the campaign, he went to see the president of Mexico, who said, we're not going to pay for the wall. He continued this line, and after he got in the White House, Trump said, well, I have a plan to make Mexico pay for the wall. We're going to put a tariff on Mexican goods and services coming to the U.S. Well, a tariff on imported Mexican goods is a price paid by Americans through higher prices. And anybody who's studied even one course in economics should know that, much less somebody who has a degree, which is why I say they gave him a degree, plus his testimony under oath at various times that make it clear he doesn't know anything about economics. The wall, which is not an effective means to stop people from coming across the border, and which you can't build at all places on the border. It is not physically possible. The natural contours of the earth won't allow it. Is simply code and subtext to Donald's supporters who are racist. That's not all of his supporters, but it's a lot of them, that he's not going to allow non-white people into the country, non-European people.
So where do we go from here? Because this narrative has really been changing. And for it to be, quote, a win for the president, what has to happen?
Are you talking about the wall?
Yes.
Well, Chuck Schumer offered him a win, and then Trump couldn't take yes. Schumer went to the White House in the budget deal, where the great negotiator is, and said, okay, we'll give you everything you've asked for on the wall. Now, under budget rules, you don't ask for the whole amount to build a project that takes years. You ask for the amount for the first year. And after he left and they realized what had happened, the White House staff suddenly goes around telling everybody, including the legislative director, well, Chuck Schumer didn't keep his word. He said he'd give us everything on the wall. Well, he did. Everything you asked for. 1 year's funding to get it started. We'll give you that. And so I don't see any good ending here. We've had Chief of Staff Kelly, the former Marine general, tell members of the Hispanic caucus in Congress that the president didn't know what he was talking about when he said he would build a wall. It's become a joke on Saturday Night Live, but it's a very convenient tool for Donald to whip up his base. And this is one of the strangest things about Donald, and who I've known for 30 years and have covered off and on all during those years, but watched him all these years. He's not reaching out trying to expand support for himself as every previous president has done. He's not trying to figure out how do I get moderate Republicans and some Democrats to come over to me. He turns his back on those people. He antagonizes them, and he keeps appealing to the strong base that he has, a significant segment of which is composed of people who hate the civil rights movement. They just won't say it publicly.
You mentioned, of course, the Education Department and Betsy DeVos and what is happening there. I would like to go to the Environmental Protection Agency as well, run by Scott Pruitt. You write about it in the book. Where are we on climate change, and how ultimately can you use this subject and this department as a way of demonstrating the thesis of the book of what the Trump administration is doing to America?
Well, Joe, I tell in detail the story of one particular manager at the EPA. Her team was told to assemble everything that showed any weakness in enforcing the environmental laws of this country, you know, the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act that were signed by a Republican president, Richard Nixon, and other areas under their purview. And they did extensive, lengthy reports. They got no feedback at all. They were called into meetings, the ultimately one that Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, was at. They were required to disgorge all these weaknesses they might face if they were litigating with polluters. And a few questions were asked about their reports, and then they were dismissed. Presumably, those reports are now in the hands of the polluters. Scott Pruitt has vowed to destroy the EPA. He filed 13 or 14 different lawsuits against them when he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma. He's certainly looking to a career as a future U.S. senator from Oklahoma. And he is, you know, the senator from the carbon fossil fuel industry. And we also know that, Pruitt asserts that he's doing these things independently. There are documents showing that, in fact, he's working hand in glove with people from those industries and pursuing their interests, not your interest, if you're not the owner of oil wells, gas wells, etc.
How much do you believe in overturning much of the work that was done by previous administrations, but certainly the Obama administration? How much of this is just that? That anything that the previous administration did, anything that President Obama did, can't be good for America, so we're going to change it. Is that an oversimplification?
No, I think, Joe, that's right on the money, particularly Barack Obama. Now, let's remember at the Gridiron Dinner 1 year, this event that I would never go to of correspondence where you roast the president and make fun of him. Obama got up and made some jokes about Donald Trump and his television show, The Apprentice. One of the lines was something like, you know, having to decide whether to fire Meatloaf for somebody else. What a big decision to make.
Right.
And Donald has no capacity to laugh at himself. He has completely incapable, you know, of making fun of himself. And he really got angry about this. It's the kind of thing that gnaws away at him inside. There are things I've said to him over the years that still gnaw away at him, and you see them pop up once in a while when he talks about me. It's just the nature of who he is. This is not a man who has ever known joy and contentment in his life. He doesn't laugh. He doesn't have those kind of emotions within him. And so if Obama's done something, it has to be bad. And let's remember, who started the whole birther nonsense? Who said, I have investigators in Hawaii, and what they're finding is incredible. It's absolutely incredible what they're finding in Hawaii. then we never heard what they're finding because there's nothing there. If you're one of the people listening who thinks Barack Obama wasn't born in America, I'll just point out to you that competing Hawaiian newspapers, the Advertiser and I forget the name of the other paper, the Star Bulletin, used to run birth announcements from the local hospitals. They both ran the birth of Barack Obama at a local hospital in 1961. So you would have to believe somebody at the birth of a child with a strange name of Barack Hussein Obama planted that in a newspaper in 1961 so they could pull off his election to be president in 2008. If you believe that, you probably think that the sun revolves around the earth and the earth is flat.
You write at the end of the book in a chapter called The Con Unravels, as these pages show, based on his own words and deeds, Donald Trump is manifestly unfit to hold any public office. That Donald Trump legitimately holds office under our Constitution is beyond question. That he is a clear and present danger to the whole world should be obvious by now. How do you believe the con is unraveling, and what does that ultimately mean?
Well, more and more we are seeing from his actions that he just doesn't know what he's doing. Joe, have you heard of the RCEP?
I have not heard of the RCEP.
Most Americans haven't. You should worry about it for your job.
Okay.
Donald Trump killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership as soon as he became president. Now, I was one of the most prominent and early critics of the TPP, not because we shouldn't have a trade deal in the Pacific, but because it was very, very heavily weighted towards corporations and especially monopolies, and it took away rights from individual Americans. Well, so Trump kills it. But he doesn't do anything to replace it or adjust it or fix it. In steps China with the Regional Comprehensive Economic Program, the RCEP. It's 15 Pacific Rim countries plus India. And China is now getting those countries to pivot away from Washington and towards Beijing. I was in Australia to lecture both on Trump and on tax policy in October, and everybody I talked to, government officials, professors, journalists, bartenders, they all were talking about how Australia is pivoting towards China. This is not good for us. It's not good for our leadership in the world. It's not good for our economy. Japan just made a huge new deal with the European Union. They made it last year. Trump was in Warsaw, Poland, speaking to an audience where only people who support Trump were allowed in, and he hasn't done anything in reaction to that deal. We are falling behind in trade because Donald has no idea what he's doing, and the real damage from this won't show up tomorrow, but it will show up, even if he's in office for two terms, in the long run, and we will pay a horrible, horrible price for this in terms of our economic well-being and our stature in the world, and at the same time, Most of our embassies do not have an ambassador. We don't have an ambassador in Saudi Arabia or Egypt or Jordan. My goodness, just think about the national security implications of that.
So ultimately what that does is it means much more trade among economies that are working in this partnership with China, that they improve, and meanwhile, we're left out in the cold.
Exactly correct. And Trump has picked a trade fight with Canada, which they've responded to. He's picked one with Mexico. And that doesn't mean NAFTA's perfect. There are plenty of things we could do to adjust NAFTA, but he's not in there saying, let's negotiate and smooth out some of these issues. That's not because he doesn't understand trade. I show in the book from his own words, you know, all things he just obviously does not understand, and that's because his whole life he's been a con artist. He speaks in vagaries. He makes wild promises. You know, Donald asserts that he is the world's greatest expert on more than 20 subjects and has the world's greatest memory, and yet often under oath he testifies, I don't remember. I don't know. On tax, which I am a world-recognized expert on, he has testified he knows nothing about accounting. Well, if you don't know accounting, you can't know tax. That's like saying, I'm the world's greatest pilot, but I don't know what a wing is.
So what do you think's going to happen here over the next year? Are we going to be in this for another 3 years, or do you see something, as you indicate at the end of the book, the con unraveling, that eventually something is done?
Well, first of all, despite what the doctor said, I don't think Donald's in such great health, and I certainly hope nothing happens to him that's bad. But don't be shocked if you wake up and find out he's had a stroke or a heart attack. Under the 25th Amendment, it's not workable. It only works when the president voluntarily relinquishes his position temporarily because he's going in for surgery. As for impeachment, the Democrats would have to win control of the House and the Senate because the House impeaches and you're tried in the Senate. If they do it on the basis of Donald's long, deep, corrupt relationships with the Russians, and go back and look at the email that was sent to Don Jr. in June of 2016 and read the fourth paragraph, which says, as part of Russia's efforts to help, which tells you the Russians were already working hand in glove with the Trump administration. This wasn't a we'd like to help, we're already helping. If Robert Mueller's investigation leads to Trump's removal from office through impeachment because he's disloyal to the United States, what about Mike Pence? He would be the beneficiary of Russian interference in our election. Can we allow him to be president? If the decision is made to remove Pence as well, then you're going to have a Democrat, probably Nancy Pelosi, as president. Some people are going to scream, lawful coup d'etat. And I think if that happens, whoever is speaker and a Democrat would have to say, I'm a caretaker president, I'm not running, I will not be involved in the election, and pursue that. If Donald is removed from office, whether through impeachment, through losing Republican primaries in 2020, or losing the general election, he will claim it's illegitimate, and he will spend the rest of his life going around the country fomenting violence and revolution. And if you doubt that, remember what he did during the campaign when he needed to get votes. He pointed out people in the audience, almost all of them black, and said, beat them up. I'll pay your legal bills, he said in one case, urging the crowd to commit violence, and he also did that against journalists. Remove him from office, and you will see him foment violence all over the place. So if they're going to remove him from office, I believe they need to criminally prosecute him, get him convicted, and put him in prison. And I realize that sounds very harsh to people, but Donald has committed many crimes in his life. He's twice been tried civilly for income tax fraud, could have easily been charged criminally for the same matter. He's confessed to sales tax cheating. He has cheated workers, including illegal immigrants, out of their pay. There are thousands of businesses who did work for him where when they would deliver the work, he would take it and then say, I'm not going to pay you, sue me. And of course, if the amount of the work is $50,000, $100,000, even $250,000, you can't afford to sue. And he has lied and denied in government documents, and he's tried to hide audit records. He has a long history of this behavior that most people don't know about unless they read The Making of Donald Trump, which all is based on public record documents that I cite in the book so you can go and look it up for yourself, because I know it would be hard for many people to believe what a heavyweight criminal he's been, including especially his years of very deep involvement with a major international cocaine trafficker, involvement that makes no sense unless they were in business together.
David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, an investigative reporter. He has lectured on economics, journalism, and tax policy. He teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. The name of the new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. David, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, published by Simon & Schuster, by David K. Johnston. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.